The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Very excited to get stuck in to the Walsh Sisters, which premieres on RTE1 tonight. The series is adapted from two of Marion Keyes' iconic novels, Rachel's Holiday and Anybody Out There, and it follows five sisters, of course, Anna, Rachel, Claire, Maggie and Helen, as they navigate addiction, family crises and the ties that hold them together. Stephanie Preisner is the writer and creator of the Walsh Sisters, and she stars as one of the Walsh Sisters, Maggie that is, and she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning. I'm very excited to get stuck into this. Stephanie, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Great. Thank you so much for having me on.
How does it feel to be taking over from the Traitors Ireland tonight at 9:30 on RTE1?
I know, right? Well, I think it's really positive that people have gotten so used to it's good for me, for the viewership, that people are like kind of used to watching terrestrial television on Sunday night.
It's brilliant.
I'm hoping it's as dramatic as Traitors. But yeah, I was a huge, huge fan of Traitors.
I can't wait for the British one to start. Yeah, I can't wait for the celeb one to start. And like you said, occasion television is back, hopefully to stay. And that idea of Sunday night television, it's real Glen Rowe television, isn't it?
Yeah, those Sunday scaries. I think, you know, while some people are saying, like, oh, it's very late, it is very late. But for me, I kind of look at it like, at least we have the time to, like, get the house in order and, like, get ready for the week and then just sit down. And it's the last thing you do on a Sunday night.
Yes.
So, and then for some people who are going to be hopefully super fans of the show, we have a podcast that will go live just after it ends. So, like, around 10:30 on the Sunday night, a podcast that Marion and I have hosted together. And it's an official companion podcast. So,
brilliant.
After each episode goes out, we'll discuss the episode that we've just seen.
Great. An audio podcast, is it?
Yes.
Great.
Visual and audio. So it's available wherever you get your podcasts, but the video version of it will be available on RT Player.
Brilliant stuff. Where do we start with this, with the Walsh Sisters? Rachel's Holiday is one of my favourite books of all time. I reread it only recently. Do we start in New York? Do we start in Dublin?
We don't start in New York. So it's the Walsh Sisters. So the crucial part for me was, how do I get these sisters all to be in the same place at the same time? If you've read Marion Keyes' books, you know that Rachel's Holiday is almost certainly just about Rachel, and Anybody Out There is just about Anna, and Angels is just about Maggie. But I wanted all the sisters to be inhabiting the same world at the same time. So we had to kind of move it forward. It's not set in the 90s. It's set in today's world. And the girls are living in Dublin.
Okay.
So that we're not going to New York. We're in Dublin, and all of the girls are together. But apart from that, it's quite similar. Like, Rachel's Holiday starts with this sort of like the morning after a terrible night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she doesn't think it was terrible, but the people around her thought it was terrible.
Okay.
And she is, you know, forced, like, everyone's like, God, this is too much. Like, you need to stop. And she's like, oh my God, you're so dramatic. Like, this is absolutely normal what I'm doing. Everybody does this.
Okay.
And it's about whether or not she's able to, I guess, confront the delusion and accept, actually, people are right. But also her sister, Anna, who is almost like Bridget in the books, who's like her best friend, the person she lives with and her confidant, how Anna comes to realise, like, oh, actually, this is not normal. And how did I not see this sooner? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we meet Anna on the day that she has had some big news herself with her boyfriend, let's say. I'm not going to give away too much spoilers.
Okay. So we're getting a storyline from each of them then?
We're getting a storyline from each of the girls.
With the storylines that we know already. So the addiction storyline is there for Rachel, etc.
Exactly, yeah. And the first time you see Maggie, she's doing a pregnancy test.
Okay.
And, you know, so we're taking all of the stories and weaving them together so that they make sense to run concurrently.
I have to say, Ma and Da Walsh are very glamorous compared to what they were in
my
head.
They are so funny. I think, like, it's called the Walsh Sisters, but I think people are going to be like, oh no, give me more Mammy and Daddy Walsh.
So they're Carrie Crowley from here in the southeast, from County Waterford.
Ireland's
own, via the US, Aidan Quinn, who is a very, very suave man back in the day.
And you might know him. It's spooky season. It's Halloween coming up, and he's so well known for Practical Magic, and I think he's done loads of other things as well. But that's how I knew him growing up. Oh my God, he's the nicest man in the whole world. He's just, you know, he could be whatever way he wanted to be, and we'd still have cast him because he's such a good actor. He's so well known.
Yes, and those blue eyes.
those blue eyes. And so we would have tolerated whatever from that sort of an A-list person. Uh-huh. But he was just the nicest man, so generous. Like, you'd do a scene with him and he'd talk to you afterwards about how great it was and what his favourite bit was and this amazing thing that you did. Like, just so, so lovely.
That's just brilliant.
And we've all become so fond of him. Like, he feels like our actual dad.
Aww. And tell me, how did the Walsh sisters' journey start for you, Stephanie? Did it start with being approached about the writing and then did the acting come afterwards?
Oh, I didn't know that I was going to be acting in it until probably about 6 weeks before we shot.
Okay.
And if I had, I wouldn't have written the only sex scene in
the entire show
for myself.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like, you something to look forward to in episode 3. I was approached in 2018 to fly to London and pitch my idea for how I saw an adaptation of Marion Keyes' books going.
Okay.
I didn't know, like, is there going to be, are other writers being interviewed? What's happened? Like, what is this? But I went in and I met Dixie and Nick, who are two amazing producers, and I told them how I wanted to do it, which isn't too far actually from how it's turned out. You know, I knew I wanted them all, like, another writer would have gone in maybe and said, okay, we're going to do season 1 Rachel's Holiday, it's going to be set in New York, and do it like as a 90s set piece, but I didn't want that. And then I got a call to say, like, we really like what your idea is for the show, and we'd love to work with you on it. And then 7 years passed and here we are.
Yeah, COVID in between and everything kind of scuppered a while.
Yeah.
And were you a fan of Marion's books, of the Marion Keyes Walsh sisters books? Because there's a lot of them. There's 5 of them in total.
Well, there's actually 7 of them now because she's also written, in the last 2 years,
course,
she's written Again, Rachel and My Favourite Mistake.
Yeah.
I haven't read them because I've been trying not to.
Okay.
Be like influenced into how, where to go with that. So I haven't read the most recent 2. I mean, I remember my mum and my aunt reading Rachel's Holiday.
Yeah.
We were on holidays in Spain and I remember looking at the sun loungers and there was like all these women lying down and they all had the same book. And I was like, God, maybe there's like a book list when you're an adult as well. And that's just like what you have to read. And then I remember being probably in my early 20s. I just moved to Dublin. I'd finished college in UCC and I just moved to Dublin. And I was in my nana's house and I was just looking for something to read. And, you know, I just think there's a Marion Keyes book in every house of that era, just on the shelves. Like Marion Keyes, Maeve Binchy, they're all just sitting on shelves waiting to be consumed. And I think it's like a rite of passage for an Irish girl. Like, when is your first time that you experience Marion Keyes? Because it is transformative. And so I was probably in my early 20s and Rachel's Holiday was the first one that I read.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would have done probably Watermelon, Angels, and I was just hooked. Like, Marion is just so iconic. The compassion she has for Irish women, the insight she has, I just think she's absolutely incredible. And I feel absolutely I feel a little bit like I'm riding on her coattails, but I know that she's also really happy with the show.
And there's just something about big family, like, even, you know, when the Kardashians came out first and they were so popular and there was such a conversation about family and support and why they were so popular. We weren't seeing as much of that on television. There is something great about an Irish family, isn't there? And one that's not afraid not to slag each other.
Yeah, and that is, like, you'll see, you've probably seen from some of the trailers, but you'll see tonight, like, they have this weekend lunch every weekend. And the way that they get through life is like this deep love, which is based on shouting at each other and tearing each other to pieces.
But no one else can do that. You have to be in the family to do that.
Yeah, like, you can't say anything bad about my sister, but I will say everything bad about her. And I'm actually an only child myself, so I had to do a fair amount of research on that. And Instagram has been a huge help that way. Like, I've got a lot of followers who are like 1 of 5.
Okay.
And Caroline Menton, who plays Rachel, she is 1 of 5 sisters.
Okay.
She also has a brother. So it's been great to like have that insight and be able to ask people, like, does this read? And everyone who's read it has been like, oh, this is exactly what it's like at lunch at my house. So I think as well, if you stick close to what Marion wrote, you're not going to go too far wrong.
Well, true. And have you had much interaction with Marion throughout this process?
Yeah, loads. Absolutely loads. And she's been writing these for like 35 years.
Mm.
And she has had many times some producer option her books and tell her they're going to make a series and it's never happened.
Mm.
And so she, at the start, had to kind of guard herself protect her heart from what might not happen. Mm-hmm. And so I know her outside of work and we're good friends. So as things came up, like I was single when I started writing this show. Now I'm married, I have two children, I had multiple miscarriages, mm-hmm. all of that was going on, COVID was happening, and I was in touch with Marion as a friend the whole time, and we just never mentioned the work until one day, like a good bit after we knew that it was actually happening, she was still kind of withholding.
Okay.
And then I was like, what's going on? And I was like, look, I have to go, I have to leave this call, I have to go and do more auditions. And she was like, sorry, what? Is this actually happening?
Oh, really?
I was like, oh, Marion, I am in a room. I found Rachel. And then the floodgates opened and she was like, oh my goodness, wow. I can't believe it. I'm so happy. You can have my coat and I have these lovely shoes. And what is Anna going to look like? You know, like just fully involved.
You do a good Marion so Keys generous. There, by the way, Stephanie.
Well, I'd want to after all the content I've consumed of her. I feel like I've been stalking her for the last 7 years.
Oh, listen, I'm so excited for tonight. 9:30 on RTE1. As you said, there's 7 Walsh Sisters books. So I hope we're going to get a season 2 and a season 3, etc. from this.
I mean, I certainly hope so too. Write your local representative and demand it.
Stephanie, it's so lovely to talk to you this morning. That is Stephanie Preisner. She's the writer and creator of The Walsh Sisters tonight, 9:30 on RTE1. But she's also Maggie in The Walsh Sisters. And as she says, episode 3, she has the one and only bedroom scene. So, wow.
Which isn't actually in a bedroom.
Is your mum... okay. I hope your mum is well prepared for this now.
She is. She's
good
great.
Stuff. Stephanie, great to talk to you this morning.
Thank you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Sunday morning, you are listening to Beat and it's the last weekend of September. So we're heading into spooky season. Lots going on around the southeast if you celebrate the Samhain. And we'll be looking at a few events as we get closer to Halloween. Mount Congreve in Waterford is where we'll kick off. And Sarah Drone joins me this morning to fill us in on their interactive event that sounds like it might be family friendly. We're not talking super scary, are we, Sarah?
No, not at all. And thanks for bringing us on, Orla. We're delighted to have, I suppose, this really new exciting experience for families. It's not scary. It's not full of horror. It's more about kind of myth and magic and very much family friendly.
Gorgeous. It's called Guardians of the Gardens, an interactive dragon trail. For people who don't know Mount Congreve, describe it and how a garden trail and an interactive one would be perfect for the venue that is Mount Congreve.
Well, I suppose, look, it's a very unique setting. We're located very close to Waterford City, just a 10-minute drive, but you could be in another world. Mm-hmm. It's an 18th-century estate with a beautiful drive and avenue, and then the house just tends to kind of make its appearance out of nowhere. And, you know, you really can take in the sheer scale and history of the place. There's a beautiful visitor centre with the Stables Cafe, again, family-friendly menus, kid-friendly menus, and a lovely shop by Foxford for people to browse, and full range of jelly cats for all the kids. And then you have Mount Congreve House where people can visit some rooms. But really for us, the hero are the gardens. And particularly at this time of year, with the leaves turning colours, it's just absolutely breathtaking. And then the Guardians of the Gardens, which will be the Halloween experience, will take place on the front lawn. And that will be transformed into this magical trail with 10 dragons.
Okay.
So the dragons are sent in to protect the gardens. They each have their own kind of personality and have come from different parts of the world to protect Mount Congreve.
Okay.
And they breathe fire. Wow. And they make noise. But again, you know, just to, I suppose, put any minds at rest, not in a scary way.
Okay. Maybe a few little jumps, you never know. Just
maybe
if you
a
feel
few.
Like that. Yeah.
Yes, and I suppose we'd suggest if you did have anybody nervous, you know, come more in the daytime hours because I think things kind of change, you know, when it gets a little bit darker as well, just for anybody who might be a bit more sensitive.
Okay, and they're over 5 meters tall. Like they're pretty
huge. They're very lifelike. they breathe smoke, they roar, they there's fire, you know, so it is very immersive and just great fun, you know.
Great stuff. Why dragons? Why did you decide dragons?
Well, I suppose we wanted something that would really engage with families, you know, something a little bit different. And, you know, Moncongreve has a global plant collection, but a lot of it would come from Asia. So some of the dragons are Asian dragons. So it just kind of fits the narrative somewhat, but yet opening it up and broadening it to a wider audience.
Lovely stuff. And you've lots of other stuff going on as well. You've got some ability for people or kids to bounce. You've got a play zone in there as well.
That's right.
Toddler specific playtime as well. Admission, if you want to check it out, is at mountcongreve.com. That is the website. And they're available now to book. And you had told us the dates, but they are the 24th to the 27th of October. If you want to check out the brand new Guardians of the Gardens interactive dragon trail at Mount Congreve in County Waterford. It's fully outdoor experience. There's 12 dragons in total, over 5 foot tall, and the final entry is at 5 o'clock. So that'll be night. Will that be dark at that stage? So
it'll be dusk. It'll just, you know, the light will have dimmed, but not quite fully dark.
It'll be a nice atmospheric
between. Atmospheric, yes. Exactly.
That's what you want. Yes. Great. Well, a great way to kick off our Halloween events. And we'll check out more as the weeks go on, as we lead up to Halloween. But that is mountcongreve.com. If you want to check out more details about the Guardians of the Gardens, the interactive dragon trail, that was Sarah Drohan from Mount Congreve. Sarah, thanks a million for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Orla.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
Welcome back to the Sunday Griff.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Yes, it's your boy Brian, and a miracle has occurred, for Orla has gone, done and seen a movie.
Yay!
Say hello, Orla.
Hello, Brian.
And what movie did you go see?
I went to see Downton Abbey, the grand finale.
Fair play to you. I have this all written out. I'm so efficient.
I know, well done.
So for that reason, Orla will be reviewing Downton Abbey, the grand finale. I was so sure you're going to get the name wrong. I wrote out the name as well. And look at the world of... Look, okay. The world of Downton Abbey is not new to many people, right? It's a thing that people know about. And for those that are willing to take heed, this is the finale. Because let's be real, if you're going to see Downton Abbey grand finale,
don't start now.
Yeah, it's the wrong time. And the movie serves as a finale in the beloved franchise, asking the question: when it's time to end an era, how does one let go?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to listen to a clip, Orla?
Let's do it, Brian.
That is what's happened. Now we must just get on with it.
What about her running, Downton? Don't you want her in command?
The world is changing. The way we talk, the way we dress, the way we deal with each other.
Surely you're entitled to have some fun.
Classic Mary.
You look back and think about all the changes you've witnessed.
You're the daughter I never had. I'll treasure those words.
Families like ours must keep moving to survive. And all of your support is more important to me than I can say.
If Mama were alive, what would she do?
So, Downton Abbey grand finale.
That's it.
Do you want to tell me where we're at with this?
Can we just explain before we start that Brian was meant to see this for weeks on end?
No, okay. No, okay, okay.
Here I am.
Let's give this some context.
Taking one for the team.
Oh, I didn't go 1 week. And then, well, there was 1 week you said, let's go, and it wasn't out yet.
Yeah.
Then another week you said, let's go, and I didn't. And then you were like, fine, I'll do it myself. And I haven't seen anything else this week because I was like, if this backfires, this is all on you.
So here we are. I went, not only did I go, I went to the plushest cinema where they had reclining chairs. And I've realized, Brian, I don't like a reclining chair.
Did you fall asleep?
No, I didn't. But I felt I was a bit, just like being reclined into my old age.
For those
That's
of
what
you,
it felt like.
For those of you that listen to this audially, she leaned backwards.
I made a sound as I went. But yeah, so I felt very plush, very Downton-esque while I was there.
Did you have like, I don't know, what do people have in Downton Abbey? Like a A mead.
Definitely not a popcorn anyway, but yeah, a mead or something.
Probably like a goose or something.
Yeah, a little bit of goose.
Did you bring in your own goose with you, unwrapping it in the middle of the thing? Yeah. So tell me the story. Tell me where we're at with it.
Okay, so Downton Abbey, the finale, is the 1930s. If you've been watching Downton Abbey, it was set in pre or post World War One, Titanic era. That's how it all started back in the day. And it was a real conversation about there was no male heir. Well, we have come a long way. Because the heir now is Lady Mary, but Lady Mary is now a divorcee of the 1930s, and that has created a huge scandal, and a very hammy scandal, I would say. There's one scene where she's at a party in London, and the king and queen of the time are arriving, and she has to be sent out before the king and queen see her because she's created such a scandal.
I did see that in the trailer. Mm-hmm. I did see that there was a bit of thing. And the cast is pretty much the same.
It is very
except
much the same.
Except for Paul Giamatti's in this one. Or has he been in it before?
Paul Giamatti has been in it before because he is Lady Cora, who is the sister's mother. So she's American and Paul Giamatti is her brother in this movie. And he has a storyline. Brian, everyone has a storyline in Downton Abbey, and there are many characters in Downton Abbey. And the downside, I would say as well, is, you know, the last Downton Abbey was a few years ago, and you're kind of expected to remember.
2022 was the last
part
one,
of it. Well done, well researched.
I saw it.
Oh, well done even more.
I'm pretty sure I reviewed it here.
You're expected to remember lots of these things. Like Lady Mary, when she said she was divorced, I was like, who was she married to? Who was
Tom?
That person?
No, Tom
so she has her first husband and he died in a car accident. Oh. And then she marries someone else in the last film, and now she has divorced him. And it's all about passing the house on to her and her father's. He has a real problem with how, you know, there's not much money anymore. They have a house in London and they have to decide what they're going to do with the house in London. And lots of big families are downsizing. It's interesting. It's an interesting take on the 1930s. But it's very, very hammy. The only way I'd describe it.
Well, that's good because like the director is Simon Curtis, so he directed the other Downton Abbey. So in case you're worried about it being like a different vibe,
definitely not.
Surely he's the
vibe.
Same. He also directed Goodbye Christopher Robin. Did you see that?
No, I don't think so.
It's very sad, and it's also about like growing up to let things go, which is I think it kind of reflects in this a small bit. And
he's also married to the woman who plays the mother in Downton Abbey.
Oh.
Elizabeth McGovern, who is Lady Cora in Downton Abbey, is his wife.
Did he meet her before or after the movie? Is it a nepotism thing?
I think before.
Oof. And then the writer is the same writer that wrote the show. So it's a guy called Julian Fellowes.
Julian Fellowes.
And I looked him up. And did you know, this is a little fun fact for you, that he was the Minister of Defence in Tomorrow Never Dies, the James Bond film.
Wow, really?
There you go. That's a little fun fact.
He's made a mint from Downton Abbey, I would say.
He's been, so Downton Abbey's been around since 2010.
Like, it was huge back in the day when it was its television series, and it really went a little bit silly in the last few seasons. So taking it on as a movie seemed like its natural next step.
Is this the second or third movie though?
This is the third movie, I think.
Yeah, and where does it rank when in terms of the three?
See, the thing about
you don't remember the other two.
Exactly.
I do. You're going to do some smart answer, but so you have no idea what you're saying.
Like, the writer and singer performer Noel Coward, or a version of Noel Coward, is in this movie, and there's this whole storyline about movies and movie writing and script writing, and it's all like it's in jokey to me, but obviously it happened in the last movie, but I don't remember it. So I'm a bit like, what is going on? But I'm okay because I'm watching the fashions and I'm looking at the cars and the big houses and
it is kind of
jewelry.
Mad. The things that kind of fall in like the MCU of it all, where you're like, oh, you need to know 15 years worth of lore in order to actually fully appreciate this movie.
And I have no time to do two Downton Abbey movies, you know, before I watch the third.
Doesn't sound like that much, to be fair. If you've seen it already, you love the franchise, apparently. But yeah, so that's one of my questions. I wrote out questions and everything. I'm so efficient about
this. I'm like a proud mother here.
It's weird to have like one of these things prepared properly. So do you feel like this is a Downton Abbey movie? Does it fit in with the thing, or does it just kind of feel like it's like, okay, we need to make another movie?
No, it fits in completely. You know, it has never been a case, apart from maybe one actor, that someone has decided to leave the Downton Abbey franchise. They know where their bread is buttered. So we're just meeting the same characters, you know, the same maids, the same cooks, the same butlers and the same family. There never has to be an explanation about where anyone is, except for, of course, Maggie Smith, who died in the last Downton Abbey
she didn't movie sign up for the sequel.
And has since died in real life as well. And there's such a lovely tribute to her throughout it. She's brought up and discussed, I think, as any family would discuss a matriarch that has died. It's really gorgeous. And a conversation about Lady Cora and her husband, played by Hugh Bonneville, of course, moving to her house.
Okay, no,
the Dowagey house. Yeah.
There's like a portrait of her. I think I saw that in the trailer as well. And people can kind of bring it up.
Tears. I cried.
Oh, that's good. You wanted to, well, for finale, you always want to cry. If you're not crying in finale, what's the point?
Yeah.
Now, is it a fitting finale, though? Is this like, are you happy to end it there? Or is there like anything?
I think in a few years' time, the cynic in me will say that the Crawley family are returning because Lady Mary is telling her story. Lady Mary has two children. She's on her own. It's perfect for a story about her in midlife, maybe meeting someone and thinking about passing on the house to her child. So maybe in 10 years, we might see another Downton Abbey. But as it stands, this was a really fitting and lovely way to end a franchise that has been ongoing for 15 years.
Yeah. But even like, you think of the actors as well, like committing to that for like 15 years. Yeah,
that's
really
what I'm saying.
Like,
the fact that they keep
there.
Coming back to it. Yeah. And huge actors that were massive even before Downton Abbey, like someone like Hugh Bonneville, for example.
Maggie Smith as well. That's probably the bigger one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last one, this is fun. So
you're not meant to say the last one.
Oh, really?
Just do your question.
Oh, sorry.
And then we wind it up.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. The movie magic is getting to me. So you're near retirement age yourself.
Oh.
So
come on now.
So when you sail into the sunset, do you think it's more important that you did what you did or that you had fun while you're doing it?
I think it's more important that I had fun while I was doing it. And I think Downton Abbey could say they had a lot of fun while they were doing this because essentially, you know, it's not a deep movie. It's, as I keep saying, really hammy. There's lots of theatrical stares and the music really lets you know the way you're meant to be feeling. But it's a lovely, wholesome movie that I think makes a lot of people sentimental, and it has a historical element to it as well. It's just lovely. I really enjoyed it. I would recommend you go and see it, and especially in those big plush chairs.
Yeah, well, as long as you don't fall asleep, that's always my worry with those. To be fair, Hugh Bonneville had like the best career ever when you think about it. Like,
brilliant.
Like he did like Notting Hill in like 1997. And then did like Paddington movies and the Downton Abbey movies.
Yeah.
And he's just like in these wholesome, lovable English movies throughout his entire life. Never had any issues. Just that seems like a really nice guy. And he's just happy to be there.
Norton. He goes and lives his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Orla, Black Puddings.
Oh, I can't believe I get to do this.
Yeah. It's stressful, isn't it?
No, not really. Oh. Look, it's not going to change your life. You're not going to leave it. I did a deep dive of Noel Coward when I left, actually, Downton Abbey, because I was so intrigued with him. But you'll forget about it a few days later, and therefore you won't remember any of the characters when you go watch the movies. But I loved Downton Abbey. I'm going to give it a solid, as Brian Griffith would say, a solid 8 out of 10. Black Pudding.
Is that your impression of me? It sounds like you're doing an impression of me, but it just sounds like you.
No comment.
Okay. Thank you very much, Orla. We're going to play a song or something now.
Well done, Brian.
Thanks, Orla.
Good.
This is easy.
9. It's not, actually. A solid 9 Black Puddings out of 10.
You just changed your mind.
Too.
Oh, for me. Okay. Yeah. I got a higher rating than the movie. I'll take it.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.